Welcome to the Eat Allergy Safe podcast, where it's all about solving the challenges of living with allergies so you can be more confident and stay allergy safe. Here's your host. She's an adrenaline pen carrying grown-up allergy kid, Nina Modak.
Hello and welcome to the Eat Allergy Safe podcast. Today, I'm really excited because I'm going to be talking to a business owner. For some of you who live in London or maybe in Birmingham and another, I think Manchester, you might know of this guy as the donut guy. And you might have seen them all over social media. They're getting awards. They've recently been talked about in, I think it was the Independent newspaper for the donuts. So today I'm really excited to welcome Ryan Panchu, who is the founder of Burrow 22, who produce gluten-free vegan donuts. So welcome, Ryan. Thanks for joining me.
No, thank you for having me, Nina.
So the first thing I like to ask everybody who comes on is tell me a little bit about your allergy journey. Like, how did it start and then what happened?
Okay, so mine is slightly different in that. When I started to think about Burrow 22, I didn't really have any allergies, to be fair. Mm-hmm. I think I may have had a slight allergy to dairy, which is very common in people who are of Caribbean descent. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure why. I don't know if it's our diet, but in the Caribbean, there's a lot of starchy foods. I don't know if that has anything to do with it at all. So we're not used to perhaps having as much dairy, and maybe a little bit of a dairy intolerance. But the main sort of reason I started the business is because my wife at the time was dairy and gluten intolerant. And my children as well were both dairy intolerant. And we discovered that from a very, very young age. So strangely enough, I know during my wife's pregnancy of my first child, my daughter, she lost her allergies. She was able to have dairy and gluten, which I have heard of that happening before, and other sort of strange things that happen when the women are going through pregnancy. So that lasted after the birth, and she was breastfeeding her for quite a while. And she'd had some cheese, I think, that day, and breastfed my daughter, and she just started screaming down the house. So we process of elimination. I still, to this day, don't know how we managed to pinpoint it down to dairy, but we did go and cut dairy out of the diet, changed the formula, and it worked. And she was fine after that. And it was a carbon copy for my son as well. So he didn't react straight away. I think it was a lot earlier than my daughter, maybe about 3 months. Okay. But same thing. And then we sort of knew then from experience, cut out the milk formula with a soy-based one, and he was fine as well. So it's mainly living life sort of vicariously through them, really, and seeing and shopping, being out on a high street and snacks, all these kind of things, just seeing how it impacts on them. That's really caused me to sort of do anything about it.
Okay. And then, like, how old are your children now?
So my daughter now is 11 and my son is 7.
Okay. And then, like, what was it like learning about your kids' dairy intolerance and gluten intolerance, and for your wife, like, how has it changed over the last 10, 11 years?
It's changed quite a bit. I mean, when I was sort of going out with my wife, she'd always had a dairy intolerance as long as I'd known her. I think the wheat intolerance came much later. It wasn't common for someone to have a dairy intolerance. It was just, she'd have black coffee. She wouldn't have any, she wasn't a dessert person anyway. So it wasn't really noticeable, I would say.
Yeah.
But definitely, in terms of what you could get in the supermarket, what you could pick up as an alternative to dairy, I think the only thing was maybe margarine or some kind of sunflower spread or something like that, really. No, there was none of these, hazelnut milks, almond milks, soy milks, nothing like that was available, readily available. I think if there was soy milk, it was sort of the UHT type milk. block cartons. It wasn't really anything impactful, but she's already, you know, as I said, been living with a dairy intolerance. So she was used to it and she just knew, you know, what she could and what she couldn't have. Mm-hmm. But then for my children, when they became dairy intolerant, especially at such a young age, it was a real pain, you know, to try and find stuff for them that they could have. Mm-hmm. I don't even think there was much in terms of like soya yogurts and things like that. I mean, soya milk, the soya we found was stocked in like the larger supermarkets, but it was a lot more expensive. And then as they got older, certain things like ice creams and, you know, there'd just be like one brand that you could get and you were forced to get that. Any kind of treat or anything like that or any kind of alternative, unfortunately. So it was just, I guess for me, I was frustrated or starting to frustration. And he's like, well, why isn't there stuff that's available? You know, why do we having to force our children to eat, you know, dairy products? Why isn't there more stuff on the market? So that's the sort of the questions that were going through my head and what I kept asking myself. When they too, them two came to have a dairy intolerance.
I mean, I remember my brother and my dad are lactose intolerant. Swedish Glace used to be the only dairy free ice cream available in strawberry in chocolate and vanilla. Yeah, exactly. I think my mum still has some of the hexagon tubs.
I think I cut my finger a number of times trying to open that tub. Very, very difficult.
Yeah, and Vitalite and Pure is the only like dairy free margarines. We had those in my house. So when, like, how did you like adapt your family meals and like, because obviously this is kind of new for you, not so much since meeting your wife, but having your basically everyone else in your family needing gluten and dairy free, how did that impact family meals?
Well, I guess with my wife, I think sometimes she just used to just throw caution to the wind and then just have dairy and then invariably we'd all suffer the consequence. So yeah, she'd just do that. But obviously when the kids came, you know, it was now two people, now three people that had this intolerance. So then we just started to change the meals. So it wasn't too bad, actually. I think by the time my son was born in 2010, 2011, 2012, when he started really eating sort of solid food, there was a few, as I say, those single brands that you could get as an alternative. And to be fair, I've never ever been a fan of dairy. Like I can't stand butter. I hate cream. Not intolerant to it at all. Yeah. I just do not like the taste. It's like Marmite to me. Really, really odd. Like baked beans. I hate baked beans as well. And there's going to be people thinking like, what is this? Who is this clown? Who's this alien?
I don't like baked beans either.
Yeah. I've always been like that. So, I guess by kind of default, we were kind of eating dairy free anyway. And it wasn't something that, you know, we had to single out one person. It was for the whole family. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't too difficult to adapt. I think the challenge came was when my wife became gluten intolerant. Mm-hmm. And I think that happened either just after my daughter was born or just after my son. I can't quite remember when exactly. But then, when she became gluten intolerant, then that was like a whole nother experience.
Yeah. And because obviously that cuts out bread, it cuts out pasta, most noodles, just all the quick options.
Yeah, that's right.
And your kids are gluten-free as well?
No, so thankfully, they can eat, they don't have any problems eating gluten. Mm-hmm. So it was always just dairy for them, but they were quite violently allergic to dairy. So, you know, they'd be sick if they had it like within minutes. I remember we went on a family trip to see my grandparents in the Caribbean. Mm. And my dad, bless him, gave the day before we were going to go. We stayed in a hotel overnight in Gatwick.
Yeah.
And the day before, we were at my dad's. He was taking us down there and he'd given my son like a bag of Wotsits. My son had two or three before we saw, and then we sort of intervened and took it off of him. But that night we had to get separate rooms. So we had adjoining rooms in the hotel. So I was with my daughter in one room. My wife was with my son in the other room. About 3 a.m, I just heard a scream. Oh. I went open the door and he'd just thrown up everywhere, unfortunately, all over the bed.
Oh.
So we were really worried about the flight because it's like a 9-hour flight, 10-hour to the Caribbean. But he was so out because he was so sick that night, just from like 3 or 4 what's-its. He was so out of that flight. He was pretty much sort of in and out of sleep the whole time, really. So kind of the silver lining from an awful experience. But,
at least you don't need to deal with a sick child on the plane throwing up. Yeah.
So there's any parents out there, any long haul flight, give your child something that they're allergic to. And then
I mean, are your kids allergic or are they intolerant, or are you still kind of figuring it out?
No, I wouldn't say allergic, actually. I'd say intolerant, but it's at the time, funnily enough, they had both grown out of it by the age of 7.
Yeah.
It still slightly affects them, but no way near the levels that it was before. So we could introduce, or we have introduced, dairy in small quantities at first in diet, and they're fine with it now. But then just default, we don't really, I think we've got so used to using non-dairy products that we don't really buy a lot of dairy products anyway. But yeah, they were super, super intolerant. But it wasn't sort of threatening to their health or anything like that, I would say. It was just made them really, really ill.
Throwing up all over the bedroom is just
It's not
that's not nice for a parent either, having to clean out or hotel staff.
No, exactly.
And then I was just going to ask you the next question, but if you want to add, that's fine.
No, it's fine. You go ask next.
Well, I'm sure loads of other parents can empathize with that experience. So I mean, how did Borough 22 start then? Because you said your wife not really got a sweet tooth, and then your kids have been growing out of their dairy intolerance, but then the donuts are gluten-free and they're dairy-free and like vegan suitable. So how did that start coming about?
Well, at the time, they still had a dairy. My son definitely had a dairy intolerance. My daughter was kind of growing out of it. We were just introducing it to her in like sort of small quantities. But my wife was still dairy intolerant. And gluten intolerant. And she didn't really. She tried to stay away from sugar as well, like large quantities of sugar. I think at the time it was sort of the launch of shops or brands such as Hummingbird Bakery, Primrose Bakery as well. I'm not too sure. I've been asked this question before, and I think the Great British Bake Off had started around that time as well. I knew there was a big like drive for people baking. Cupcakes were really big. It was like a boom. And there was a girl that I worked with, Yasmin Charlton, her name is. So she was a keen baker as well. And we, you know, we were talking about it, I'm sure we were talking about the Great British Bake Off and what people were baking. And we would bake things, like different things. So we tried baking like Jaffa cakes, and we made cupcakes and whatnot. And we would bring them into work for our colleagues to eat. But the only trouble is, you know, I'd bake all these wonderful things. I was buying ingredients and baking all this lovely stuff. But no one at home could eat it, really. Yeah, so it's a bit of a pain. So... and I couldn't eat it all either. did try, but it just wasn't working out. We'd bring it into work and sort of give it out to people, and I thought, well, it's not really fair, really. My wife gave me a bit of an air bashing over it. Think about your kids, Ryan. Your blood. I started to adapt the recipes.
Okay.
So it started with dairy, first of all, which was pretty straightforward, to be honest. You know, there's loads of substitutes that you can use.
Yeah.
Oils, margarine, as I said, pure, lifesaver pure. that was pretty easy to do. But it was the gluten one that was very, very hard to try and substitute gluten. And I've probably did what most people have done if they've ever tried to cook free from.
Yeah.
And that's just do exactly the same recipe, but just replace the flour with a gluten-free flour.
Yeah.
But of course, it's not that simple.
No.
So it was a lot of sort of wet sand messes produced. That's some really awful concoctions. before I sort of gave up on the whole idea and decided to do a bit of research and see how actually you could... Because I saw that people were doing it. It was, you know, it's being produced People were sharing it on social media and things like Twitter, excuse me, and Facebook. So yeah, I just wanted to find out how it could be done, really, so that I could make something that they could all eat, and it wouldn't have to be, there wouldn't have to be a compromise, or, you know, they wouldn't have to stare at this food, this lovely food that we've made, and not able to eat it.
Yeah. Oh, that's so nice. And I mean, why donuts?
Well, I just sort of dabbled in cupcakes, managed to get a recipe for cupcakes, and was looking through and just saw a recipe for donuts that I tried. I think it was using oat flour. And it was, I think that one was a gluten-free recipe, but it still had dairy products in it, and it was still sort of non-vegan, had egg in it as well.
Yeah.
And just based on what I had done, I thought, well, you know, the gluten is really the hardest thing to get right.
Yeah.
The dairy and the sort of the egg, that's quite an easy thing to replace. I started mucking around with the recipe and changing bits and pieces, ended up changing the flour, and it just worked. But I made it once. I took a picture of what I'd made, and sort of that was that. It was quite the ingredients I used as well. They weren't really off the shelf products.
Yeah,
they weren't readily available, and they were quite expensive. So just put that to the back of my mind. But it was just one of the things that I'd made. I think that I'd made brownies, I'd made cupcakes, donuts, flapjacks, loads and loads of different things. But the donuts were definitely one of the best things I'd ever made. And they were gone in 60 seconds. they just went. And by everyone, not just me this time. It was everyone that was able to enjoy them as well. So yeah, but I never plan to sell. I never planned to open up a store or take it to market or anything like that. It was just purely for the family, just so that they could have something to eat.
Oh, and how did that develop from just feeding, like treating your family, to actually becoming a fully fledged business?
Well, again, I've got my wife to thank for that business decision. So yeah, as I said, she's mainly, I would say, mainly, let's have a thing. I think she's mainly dairy intolerant.
Yeah.
And gluten intolerant. If you could put the two side by side, I think her dairy intolerance is a lot.
Yeah.
Her tolerance to dairy is a lot lower than it is to gluten.
Mm-hmm.
But my sister-in-law is the opposite. So her tolerance to gluten is a lot lower than it is to dairy.
Okay.
But they have both said, when I'd made like the brownies in particular, they had said, oh my goodness, like there's nothing out there like this. You know, I've tasted gluten-free brownies, but it's got dairy in. I've tasted dairy-free brownies that have got gluten in, but nothing that had was free of both.
Yeah.
So they both said, this is amazing. Like my sister-in-law in particular, she was smitten by them. And she was saying, well, you know, I would pay, you know, all this money really to buy this if it was in a store. So that just got me thinking that maybe there's something here. Maybe I should start charging people for it. Again, I was making it. They were having some and I was taking it to work. So why are you, you know, spending all this money on all these fancy ingredients, just giving it away? Like, why don't you sell it? So I can't remember when exactly the penny dropped or when I made the decision to take it to market, but I did. I think I put it on Facebook. So I just started going into a few different groups on Facebook.
Yeah.
Celiac group, Celiac UK. And just saying, look, this is what I'm doing. This is what I've produced. You know, is anyone interested? Is there a market out there for it? And that, it's kind of how it started. It's a very, very small scale because I just thought, well, I'm just one guy.
Yeah.
I'm not going to broadcast the fact that I'm doing this. Why are people going to trust me to, you know, even buy any of this stuff? I've not got a shop. I'm not at a market, anything like that. I'm just starting completely from scratch. So, yeah, it's that. How do I do it? I just sort of turned to Facebook in the first instance to see how it would go.
Yeah. And so, like, how many years have you been going now?
So October the 1st on Sunday, it'll be 3 years trading now.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Wow, that's really exciting. It's a 3-year anniversary. So happy anniversary for Borough 22.
Thank you very much. Say if you can make it past 3 years, you should be, you're doing something right. So
yeah. Well, most startups don't last past a year, do they? That's what they say.
Yeah, that is right.
That's so cool. And now, like, where are you selling?
So now I'm selling in, so Selfridges is the main store. Mm-hmm. Selfridges, London, Birmingham and Manchester. Oh, and wow. I sell in Timber Yard in Soho in central London. Mm-hmm. A company called Pitch, who are in Fulham Broadway. They're in One Studio London and Fitz London, all based over in Imperial Wharf, Chelsea, Fulham Way. And then a company called Yielding Seed. It used to be called the Without Cafe down in Clapham Junction in central London as well. And I'm selling at some local stores and pantries and cafes near me. So I've got the Plumstead Pantry in my hometown at the moment, which is Plumstead's. We have the Brocker down in Brockley, Good Food in Catford, Punk Me Up Ceramics Cafe. It's an amazing cafe down in East Dulwich. And also the FC Wellbeing Cafe, also in East Dulwich as well.
Oh, wow. Loads of places that people can get to in London. And
yeah.
And just spreading
still,
all
still
over.
Blows my mind.
That's so exciting. So tell me more about your flavours of donuts and like what people can expect.
Okay, so the four standard flavours that most people will have access to, so those are the ones I sell to Selfridges, are so I do a plain sugar donut. Mm-hmm. Cinnamon sugar donut, which we've won a Great Taste Award for, and that's the one that was highly recommended at the Free From Food Awards.
Oh, wow.
A raspberry glazed donut, which we've won a silver award for at the Free From Eating Out Awards last year. And I do, what's the last one? Maple glazed donut as well. So those are the four standard flavours. But at the independents and the local cafes, you will also, on the off chance, get a vegan Nutella donut. Mm-hmm. I'm doing a maple bacon donut now, which is my take. And so it's coconut bacon, coconut flakes, mm-hmm. Flavoured and seasoned and baked. That one's selling pretty well. A hibiscus flavoured donut. A rose flavored donut as well on occasion, and sometimes if I've got enough batter left over, I will try and produce my take on a jam donut. So I kind of have to fill, because they're baked, all the donuts are baked, they're mm-hmm. in ring shaped molds, so I kind of have to overfill the mold a little for the hole to close up so I can put the jam in. But on a rare occasion, say if you get one of those, you're very, very, very lucky.
Oh, wow. So anyone listening, make sure you look out for a jam donut.
yeah, definitely. Snap it up as well if you do see it.
And what's your favourite?
So my favourite, hands down, has to be the cinnamon sugared. It's the first one I ever made. As I say, they were gone really, really quickly. Everyone sort of wolfed them down. And that one, for me, it just reminds me like of growing up with my parents, going down to Deptford Market in Southeast London on a Saturday, and you had the donut vendor in his truck producing like those hot donuts that were rolled in cinnamon sugar. I mean, it's I think the goal or the aim of Borough 22, as I say, it wasn't a capitalist company by any means. Mm-hmm. It was started out purely just to service the needs of my allergen ridden family, it's for me that is I wanted to make a product that did not taste vegan, it didn't taste gluten free in the traditional sense of the words, and that's what we found as a family, that when we would go out, when we would try and get something, and if we did find something that they could have,
yeah,
just the quality at the time, it's got a whole lot better now. You're talking almost 7 years later, really. But the quality at the time just wasn't very good. So I wanted something that, you know, they didn't feel like they were the poorer cousins having to eat this product. You know, they weren't penalized for it financially because life is bad enough, right?
Yeah, especially living in London, my goodness.
Yeah.
I'm from London and I'm just like, oh, I couldn't live there again.
Yeah, it's murderous, really. So, yeah, you weren't penalised. The quality was there. For me, the cinnamon sugared one is as good as any other donut I've ever had, really. And we've got such great feedback from people about that particular flavour.
Yeah, I mean, all the awards, that's amazing. I
Yeah,
I can't wait to actually go and try one. I've seen them all over social media, and I know know about the awards that you've received, and they look amazing. I love the photography as well of all the donuts.
Thank you very much.
Are you doing that all yourself?
Yeah. So I do all the photography myself. It's all on my my camera phone as well.
Nice.
I did a post actually on Instagram stories, which showed like the Instagram photo, and then the next photo was the real life photo where it's me standing on top of a table with a slab of marble precariously hanging off the table. It's some Mission Impossible type stunts that go into producing some of these photos. But definitely, you know, there are times 6:15 a.m. in the morning where I'm up scrolling through my gallery trying to find something to post on Instagram. So it does get high pressure that sometimes.
Yeah.
But it's definitely a first world problem. So
Well, for everyone listening, Ryan has been up since 3 a.m. today that I'm recording this, dealing with deliveries. Yeah. So... like he's almost been up for 12 hours. He's been up for 10 hours already working, and he's doing this interview with me. It should be like bedtime by now.
Yeah, it's been an early start. It always is on a Friday. That's the day I do all my baking for retail. Well, central London retail. Mm-hmm. So the Thursdays to Saturdays really are crazy for me. So apologize to anyone that's ever emailed me on a Thursday, Friday or Saturday, and I've not responded perhaps until Monday. But by the end of Saturday, I'm shattered. So I just kind of fall into a hole and sleep for a day and a half.
A well-deserved sleep.
Thank you very much.
So one quick question. How did you actually get into Selfridges and start supplying to cafes?
Okay, so that's an interesting one. So as I mentioned, launched the business in October 2014, and it was very, very slow. Just people who were local. I think I was offering a service only in London at that point, or in the M25. Had very, very few orders. But someone had seen my Instagram. It was a lady called Strawberries and Gym Mats. That's not her name, obviously. So that's a handle. a lady called Amber, who to this day I've never met in person. But we connected on Instagram. I think we had both gone to like a street food market in Lewisham. Mm-hmm. And so she must have searched that handle and found me and commented on a photo that I'd left.
Yeah.
And we'd been chatting over Instagram, just commenting on each other's photos. And she was following Selfridges' food hall page at the time. Mm-hmm. And I think back in February 2015, they had like a gluten-free week. Mm-hmm. It was an area dedicated in their food hall to products that were gluten-free. And she had commented on their page, oh, you need to have you guys checked out at Borough 22. You need to get this guy, this guy's donuts in your store. Mm-hmm. So they were like, sure, you know, we're always looking for new suppliers. So obviously that came up in my feed. I saw that and I was like, wow. I was like, okay. I was like, well, if you send me a contact detail, I'll get you a sample box.
Yeah.
Which they did that night. And I remember going upstairs and saying to my wife, like, Selfridges are great contact. I think they want me to bring in like a sample box. I was just laughing. So I just couldn't believe it. She's like, no way. And I was like, yeah. So I remember going up there with my sample box, going into like the back office upstairs and meeting with the buyer.
Yeah.
And I had to be honest, really, because I was working full time at the time.
Yeah.
I've only just recently this March gone full-time at Borough 22, but up until then it's always been I call it a glorified hobby, really. So running concurrently with my full-time employment. I just remember saying to her, look, I've got to be honest with you, I do not know how I am here or how I'm talking to you. I've got no clue. But I'd like to try and make something work. And I don't know if on a different day, you know, whether she would have said, okay, thank you, but no thank you. Mm-hmm. But it just so happened, you know, she was really appreciated the honesty. And Selfridges, I have to say, have been fantastic. So they really helped me through the process. They said, well, look, what can you do? Can you do daily? If not daily, can you cover us for the weekends? Mm-hmm. They came, they audited my kitchen at home, which was probably one of the most nerve-wracking experiences I've ever had. like, they were really lovely about it. I mean, they came not with the aim to shut me down, as it were, but with the aim to, look, we need to protect our customers. We need to protect you and our business. Let's just see what you're doing and let's see what we need to do in order to bring you up to a certain standard. And it was only a couple of things that I had to do, that I had to change or had to implement. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so that was sort of February, I think that happened, or maybe even March 2015. It didn't happen overnight. Correspondence back and forth, samples, going through their processes, getting the products on their system. So by bank holiday weekend at the end of August 2015, that was the first weekend I launched in that store. And it was a massive learning curve. I mean, I took the first boxes up on the train. I was late. I got there at like 9:30 in the morning. It's about half an hour before they were due to open. So I had to take them in through the actual store and hand them over. Over the counter to them. I didn't know about loading bays. I didn't know about delivery notes. I didn't anything. Cringe. Absolutely cringe now when I think back about it. But again, you know, not, and I, when I say Selfridges, I mean them as a whole.
Yeah.
Not just from the back office, not just the PR team who had initially got in contact with me, not just the buyers, but down to the loading bay staff. You know, they would come up to collect the boxes from the security hut because I'd be taking them in on the train. And then, you know, one of the times quite early on, one of the guys, Patrick, his name is, pulled me to one side and said, look, you know, this is not really how we do this. Like, what you need to be doing is, and he explained the whole process. Told me like what boxes to use, what trays to use. And slowly but surely managed to get a system in process for delivery into store. And then once I was in Selfridges, I think the pantry were the next to come on board. Mm-hmm. So they are literally... I don't know how, maybe 400 meters from my house. So literally around the corner.
Yeah.
So I think they had seen me on Facebook. So they knew nothing about Selfridges. Mm-hmm. But then once they came on board, once Selfridges came on board, a couple of people had recommended me to Good Food in Catford. Mm-hmm. Then the others, I think it's just through social media, they'd found me just looking for new suppliers. And it just sort of built up from there, really. But because I was working full time, I had to be completely honest with everyone and say, look, this is the schedule that I'm running at the moment. This is not my full time job.
Yeah.
This is something I do on the side. Mm-hmm. And these are the parameters that I have to work within. This is probably going to be the worst case scenario, because if it's successful, you know, I'd like to do this full time. Mm-hmm. And everyone seemed to appreciate that. And it still works like that today. So a lot of the retailers from central London, retailers from locally to me, they will receive their donuts on a Friday or a Saturday.
Yeah.
Some are a bit more, but it's become like a weekend thing now. So if you make it to Friday, you know, you can go in and get your treat. If you're making it for a week, you can go and get your Borough 22 donut. At Selfridges, obviously, they have stock every day.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just crazy. Absolutely crazy. And it's probably the wrong way around, because it's, to get into Selfridges, that's something that people sort of, that may be what they have as their goal, that they see as their success. But it kind of fell into my lap, which is something I don't take for granted by any means.
But it's come about through the work that you're putting out there, because you're putting it out and someone bought them, liked them so much that they want to get them in more places.
Yeah, and that's always nice to get that feedback. It is, I mean, when it first sort of started, it was... especially on Facebook, I think people are a lot more free with what they write. So,
yeah,
you know, for every 9 fantastic comments I was getting, you'd always get one that was negative, and that's the one you kind of focus in on and you sort of beat yourself up about. And you think, well, I need to change my whole company just to please this one person. But yeah, it was nice to see that it was growing. And it just convinced me that what I was doing was the right thing, because there was no one else offering that kind of service or that kind of product. Not you know, there were vegan donuts, they were even gluten-free donuts,
but they weren't,
but no one was really promoting something that was gluten-free and vegan. So it kind of gave me the motivation, because it's up and down when you're running a business as well. You know, some days you say, I want to chuck it in. I never want to see another donut again in my life. It's like, I hate these things. And it just so happens that just when you have those moments, something would happen. Someone would say something, or you get someone would come in and inquire, or, you know, you get inquiry about a wedding or party, or, you know, a store would inquire about stocking the donuts, and it would just give you that lift and that motivation to keep going.
Oh, yeah, it's really nice to see that side of things, because I think, you know, when you're seeing a business from the social media, when you're, you know, seeing the articles, if it's featured in an article, you're always seeing the good side. So, and I know I've interviewed quite a few people in your situation where they've started a business because they couldn't find the things that they wanted or needed. And for anyone listening, if you're thinking about starting, it's not going to be easy, but it's definitely rewarding.
Yeah, definitely. And I would say, just to piggyback from that, I think collaborating as well. Definitely collaboration is key, especially if you're an independent or you know, you're a sole person running a business. It's very easy to silo yourself and to work in isolation. And that may be, you know, work well for you. But as you said, it is very, very tough. It is very, very, it's physically demanding. It can be tough going on you as well, in terms of, you know, rejection and all the work you have to do to make any headway. So it's good when you collaborate with someone. It's almost like as soon as you meet them, your body starts releasing endorphins. It's like a virtual hug almost.
And you get to bounce ideas.
Yeah, I understand. You know what? I know exactly what you're going through. So I'm going through exactly just to hear those words. I understand, or I know what you're saying. It's almost like therapy, really.
And that's why,
along the way, I've made sure that I've collaborated with a lot of people. Not just for that feeling, but because it made sense from a business point of view. It was it was very organic, and because I had a great respect and a great love of what they were doing, and it just so happened it was compatible. But yeah, it's needed to see another face, you know.
Yeah. Oh my God, I know.
See another face and talk, have an adult conversation with someone. It's definitely needed in order for you to keep going, I think, if you're starting a business, and to give you that motivation to keep going. And yeah, it's so true, because what you put out on social media
is one side.
Yeah, most of the time it's your best work. I think it's nice when people put when they're having bad days, because it kind of humanizes them as well. And then you're, like I said, you're taking people on this journey, and that's one thing that I really, really love to do. So all the highs, all the lows, I do like people to see that and be involved in that. Yeah, I do like people to see the highs and the lows, because a lot of people have been following me from the start. And I think a lot of people do think it's like a company, and it's not. It's just me.
Yeah, I know that one person band feeling.
Yeah.
You can start to go feel a bit crazy on occasion.
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, collaboration is key. Definitely, you need that in order to stay sane, I would say.
Yeah. Oh, that's so true. Well, if anyone's listening to this who runs a business, get in touch with me, because it's kind of also why I started the podcast, so I don't go crazy.
Yeah, it's such a good idea. I mean, even just to talk about the history of the company, how far it's come, you might forget all these little triumphs that you've had.
Yeah.
As well, which is nice. So sometimes to stop, go back, recap, is good as well. So thank you, Nina. Thank you for doing that.
You're welcome. Well, I hope people who've tried your donuts and are listening to this do get in touch with you and tell you, because I know when I've had emails from people, like just random emails from anyone listening, it's just so exciting. I think they're the most exciting emails I get in my inbox ever.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, hearing about people's stories who want to share, and just, you know, people who have, even the ones I've got in contact with, just because they're just willing to talk to me, and I'm like, oh, thanks.
Yeah.
That's really nice.
Yeah.
Amazing. So just before we wrap up, I want to ask you, what would be your three top tips for someone who, you know, they want to make treats or a product to help their family and potentially turn it into a business? What would be your three top tips?
Definitely top tip I would be to have some kind of strategy. Mm-hmm. That's something I never did. Don't follow my example. But no, have a strategy. I guess the nature of the business, the way it's grown, that definitely has developed now for me. But you need to have something to aim for. And then once you know where you want to take your business or where you see it, best case scenario, then you can start to work back. All right, to achieve this end goal, I need to be doing A, B, and C. And then to achieve A and B, A, B, and C, I need to be doing this, that, and the other. Mm-hmm. So in order to just sort of plot a chart, but work backwards from where you want to be, where you would like to be, and just look at all the steps you need to do to get there. Also, I would say it's good to, let's have a think. It's the best way to put this. Have a strategy. Oh, my mind's gone completely blank.
That's fine.
Oh, I've had something in mind as well, and it's just gone. Have a strategy.
Oh, goals, strategy.
Strategy.
Something to do with like actually getting things done or planning or.
No. Oh, yes, that's right. So my next step would be. Look at the industry that you want to go into, or look at the product that you want to produce, and then look at some of the bigger companies that are perhaps in that industry or doing the same thing. And one thing I've learned is that, you know, once you're starting on your own, if you're small, you don't have a budget for anything really. Mm-hmm. So it's the you're working off a shoestring budget, if anything at all. So just look at what they've done. They would have had a massive marketing budget. They would have had people around them advising them what to do. And all the decisions that they've made would have been carefully calculated. So you can look at who would be your competitor. Say if you were a massive franchise or a multi-million pound company, just look at what they've done and try and imitate that, or put your own spin on that, because... yeah, they would have done all the homework to make that decision. So, you know, what you have may be niche, but it may not be feasible. Mm-hmm. In terms of actually trying to produce that or achieve that. And they may have gone down that route and thought, right, no, we can't do this because it's not feasible. And that's why they've made that decision. So look at the companies that are in your industry and try and put your own spin on what they're already doing. And then the third thing I would say is, again, I thought of something and that's gone right out of my head. Oh, let's think now.
Is it more to do with planning or goal setting or
testing? Would say, so if you are starting out, it's like a food business, something you want to make or treat or whatever, what have you. Just think about who actually your customer is. Mm-hmm. So if you're selling direct to people, then obviously they're your customers. But if you want to sell through a store, through a shop, then really your customer is the buyer for those establishments. Mm-hmm. So what I've read and what I've seen a lot of people do is, you know, once they get into a store, once they get into a shop, even if it's, you know, a shop across the road, like the Plumstead Pantry is to me, even walking distance, or if it's a store like Selfridges, once they're in there, once their product is stocked and on the shelves, they kind of forget about it really, or sort of take their foot off the pedal. And it's the worst thing you could do. You need to really make the buyer feel like they're getting a good service, a good customer service. So keep them in mind, keep checking in on them, you know, keep it cordial, and just make them feel like they are your number one customer. Because if you look after them, the chances are they will look after you as well, and they'll appreciate that, because there's not many people that take the time to do that, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I think it's something that's very, very important. So don't lose sight as to who your customer is.
Yeah, exactly. That's so true. And I mean, as you will have experienced, whenever you find something that you can actually eat, you'll love it, just as long as they keep up the, you know, the right labeling, great taste, and, you know, help make it available to you. So yeah, that's so important. Well, thank you so much, Ryan. And look, tell people, social media, website, where can they find you and connect with you and Borough 22?
Yeah, I'm happy for people to sort of come on this journey with me. I still don't know where it's going to take me, but that's kind of how I treat my social media. So Instagram is my social media platform of choice. Mm-hmm. Twitter and Facebook are basically regrams of reposts of what I post on Instagram. So come over to Instagram and follow me, or Twitter or Facebook. The handle is at Borough22 or / Borough22. And that's Borough as in London, Borough. Mm-hmm. 22. Come and find me, interact with me. You know, I'm happy to hear your stories. I think the record so far is 29 years since someone's had a donut.
Yeah,
it's awesome. I love hearing the stories. I love connecting with customers, with people. Come and follow me. If there's any ideas for any flavors that you miss, or something you've had or you'd want to see, I'm happy for suggestions as well. I always like to sort of change them up every now and again. So come over and interact, please do. And if you can order online, head over to www.borough22.com, and I do a mail order service every Friday. So as long as you can get your order through to me by midday on the Wednesday, mm-hmm. It means you can get your box delivered by courier to UK mainland only, I'm afraid, at this point in time. But you can get it delivered by courier on the Friday or any other Friday of your choice, really. You can partake in that service as well.
Oh, exciting. Oh, that sounds so good. Well, everyone, make sure you go check out the donuts. And
yes, please do.
And connect with Ryan and share stories, and you can leave comments on the show notes page of this episode, where I'll give you a link in a little bit, and all Instagram handle and website link for Borough 22 will be on the show notes page. So thank you so much, Ryan, for joining me. It's been great talking to you and hearing about your journey.
No, thank you so much, Nina. Thank you very much for this opportunity.
So that was Ryan Panju, and he actually at the Borough 22 I knew of for quite a while before I got in touch with him to interview him. And I just see loads of stuff on social media. I love the Instagram account. It's just so pretty. I hear amazing stuff all over social media about the donuts. I know they've won a bunch of awards, as Ryan was talking about. And I hope you've enjoyed this first episode looking at a free-from business, because this is something that started on his kitchen table and now has expanded, and he's supplying to Selfridges and a bunch of other cafes and delis and shops. So if any of you have tried Borough 22 donuts, why not get in touch with us on Twitter, on Instagram, or on Facebook, and let me know what you thought of the Borough 22 donuts. You can find Eat Allergy Safe using Eat Allergy Safe as a social media handle. So give me a message. Before I go, I just wanted to say thank you for everyone who's got in touch about sharing stories. I really love hearing about them, and all the emails are so amazing. So those of you who haven't emailed in yet with your allergy win story, talking about, you know, what you found difficult living with allergies, but then how you've overcome it, what have you learned? Please do get in touch. Go to the eatallergysafe.com website, go to the contact page, and send me an email. Tell me what you've learned. Tell me a little bit about yourself, your journey, and how, you know, what you've been up to. And because these stories really do help people. I have had people like Claire Fryer, Cindy Murray, Felicia Sarbartinelli, and I mean, this is a really international community. Our listeners are in the UK, they're in America, they're all over the place. And
I love sharing these stories because a lot of them ring true, and it doesn't matter where you are in the world. The allergy community is the allergy community, and I love how it's building up and we're building our Eat Allergy Safe community. So if you have a story or you would like to suggest someone, please go to the eatallergysafe.com website, go to the contact page and send me an email, tell them a little bit about yourself or the person you'd like to suggest as a guest. And if you're suggesting someone, make sure you give me a way to contact them, maybe their email address, or if it's a free, or if it's a business or something, their website, so I can get in touch with them. So that's it for today. Thank you again for joining me. And next week, we're going to have another Free From Business, slightly different, and we'll be hearing all about their story. So remember, allergies aren't about missing out. They're about doing things differently.
You have been listening to the Eat Allergy Safe podcast by Nina Modak. If you want to help other people with allergies discover this podcast, then please rate it in iTunes. It only takes a few seconds. Your rating could make the crucial difference in letting a fellow allergy sufferer find out that they're not alone and help is available. Thank you.